Good evening and welcome to the City of Goleta's Park and Recreation Commission meeting. We're very happy to have you all watching us and we are ready to begin. We're going to start tonight off with the call to order and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Roll call. Commissioner Werner.
Present.
Commissioner Talese.
Here.
Commissioner Rodriguez is absent. Commissioner McGulpin.
Here.
Commissioner Hart.
Here.
Vice Chair Lynn.
Here.
Chair West.
Okay, thank you very much. And at this time, we are going to have some public input for anybody or any topic that is not on tonight's agenda. If you have please filled out a speaker request form and submitted it to the city clerk, they can pass that down here. Do we have any public comment?
There are no speaker slips.
Okay, thank you. Then we will move right along to item number A1, a presentation by our director, Mrs. Plummer, on Live Well Santa Barbara County. Did I just move you up a title?
Yes, thank you for the promotion, Commissioner.
I'm Chair happy West. To do that.
Good evening, Chair West and members of the commission. Tonight, I am pleased to present Trina Long with Santa Barbara County Public Health. She's here today to provide you with a presentation on Live Well Santa Barbara County.
Thank you and good evening. My name is Trina Long and I am a program coordinator with the Public Health Department. And my presentation tonight is about how my program and our coalition of partners support healthy eating and active living interventions that are occurring throughout our county. Maybe, there we go. So the program that I coordinate is the Nutrition Education and Obesity Prevention Program. It is a community-based program that's operated out of the health department, but it is federally funded. The goal of the program is to improve the health status of low-income residents by educating them and supporting environmental changes that allow or encourages them to eat healthier foods, to consume healthier beverages like water, and to be more active. We utilize the social ecological model for food and activity decisions to help us understand how layers of influence intersect to shape a person's food and activity choices. So we aren't just looking at the individual factors of age, sex, or socioeconomic status, but we also take into account the settings where people live, work, and play, as well as the organizational policies and the systems that are in place that can influence one's food and beverage intake, influence their physical activity patterns, and also ultimately their health outcomes. So the program funding is from the USDA, and it is tied to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also called SNAP or CalFresh. You may know it as food stamps in California. So the NEOT funding is targeted to those who would qualify for food stamps, and our goal is to educate them to help try to get them to consume more fresh fruits and vegetables with their food stamp dollars. In our county, approximately 35% of the population qualifies for the program, and the largest percentage of any group, any age group, are children under the age of six. So 47% of the children that are under the age of six in our county would qualify, and the next largest group is all children 6 to 17. So our efforts in the NEOT program are focused heavily on low-income families and schools that qualify based on their free and reduced lunch percentages. Our aim is to educate families, predominantly mothers of young children, since research shows that moms are the ones who tend to make the household food decisions. And one way that we do this is by partnering with school districts to provide education for the children and parents. Another hat that I wear is being the chair of the Live Well Santa Barbara County Coalition. And this is a countywide coalition that's focused on improving the health of our community by educating and advocating for health in all policies and programs. So this coalition was formerly called the Partners for Fit Youth. It's been around for about 15 years. But over the years, we've become more action-oriented and project-based. We utilize the collective impact model, and we target all people in our county, not just those that are low income. Oops. So one of the main projects that Live Well supports is the Healthy Eating and Active Living, or HEAL. And HEAL is a campaign of the League of California Cities, whose staff have worked with hundreds of city officials across California to adopt policies and systems that create walking and biking paths, that create parks and open spaces, healthy and affordable food outlets, and environments that support daily physical activity and nutrition. There are three focus areas of the HEAL resolution. They look at the environment, they look at access to healthy food, as well as employee wellness. So under the environmental focus is supporting health where people live, learn, work, and play. Examples would be having connected neighborhoods to parks and safe places where people can exercise freely. This would also include complete streets and or complete parks policies. Under the healthy food focus, the goal is to support more access to foods like fresh fruits and vegetables. For example, creating school or community gardens where people can plant, harvest, and eat the rewards of their labor, or supporting current or new farmer markets being established. This would also include encouraging our local small corner stores and markets to offer fresh fruits and produce, which many times they do not. And a lot of times that's the closest access that many of our community members have is a small little neighborhood market to get their groceries. Under the employee wellness focus, cities and counties are encouraging meeting stretch breaks and walking meetings. They're marketing the uses of stairways and supporting ergonomic workstations so that employees aren't sitting all day at work. In Santa Barbara County, we adopted a healthy vending policy that requires healthy items in the vending machines. And we have a walking challenge where everyone who signs up receives a free Fitbit through our employee benefits program. There are also weekly drawings for Amazon gift cards that act as an incentive to wear your Fitbit and to make sure that you're reaching your step goals. What did I go for? Sorry on that. To make sure that people are reaching their weekly step goals. And you know, it's crazy when you throw in an Amazon gift card in a weekly drawing, people really get competitive and they want to make sure that they're reaching at least 10,000 steps a day. So it's a good thing. In Santa Barbara County, Lompoc was the first city to adopt a HEAL resolution, and that was back in 2012. And 2 years later, the city of Santa Barbara adopted one. And then last year, Live Well Santa Barbara County was instrumental in working with the Public Health Department to bring a resolution to the board for adoption. And soon after that, the City of Santa Maria adopted a policy or a resolution as well. So Live Well doesn't only support HEAL efforts at the city or county level, but we also support them at the workplace and the school level. Some of the current projects that we're working on is a collaboration between public health and planning. And this was brought on by at a recent Live Well meeting. Folks from HEAL SLOW or HEAL San Luis Obispo presented about a work group that they created, which reviews and provides comments on development proposals that come into the county. So we wanted to have something similar in our county, and we connected with the planning department. And as a result, my staff is currently creating a one-page document that will be shared with planners, and they'll provide that to developers prior to the plans being submitted. The goal of the flyer is to highlight how land use and development directly impacts health and to encourage health into all planning projects. Live Well also recently conducted an assessment beverage vending machines throughout the county, and this is in support of our Rethink Your Drink campaign, which encourages water consumption. In the Goleta area, of the locations that were surveyed, we found one vending machine in a park, but it's a private park. So that was good. None of the park areas that we surveyed had vending machines out here. But we will be working with the cities of Lompoc and Santa Maria to share the results where a significant number of the machines in the locations surveyed did have vending machines. So we will be working with them to see if there's any policies that they may want to pursue that would support kind of marketing healthier beverages and offering healthier beverages. As mentioned, we also work closely with schools. We support the annual School Wellness Summit that Head Start is from the Orfila Foundation. We're on our fourth annual year of offering that. It's a staff development day. And this year it'll be on October 18th. And this will be our first year that we're planning a countywide healthy eating, active living summit. And I've learned that this will be the first one that's occurred throughout our state. We are in the development processes right now, early stages of planning, but we're looking at November. And so whenever the agenda and that the dates are finalized, we'll send out an announcement. It's going to be open to the public. It's going to be a one-day summit, and we're going to have inspiring presenters from across the state sharing their HEAL experiences. So we're really looking forward to that and hoping that it'll bring more inspiration and support for HEAL in Santa Barbara County. So I'd like to leave you with just a question to ponder, and that is, how can Live Well support your efforts? So if you can, just think about that, you're able to contact me at my information that's on the slide, or if you happen to come to the HEAL Summit in November, you can approach me then and we can talk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well. We might have some comments or questions. Is
sure.
that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay. Any comments or Commissioner Tolis?
Yes, I'd like to ask about the first annual NSB County HEAL Summit. So is this open to the whole public, or is it just you have to apply to come to this?
It will be open to the whole public, and we're actually hoping for it to be a tri-county summit that we're going to open up to Ventura and San Luis Obispo County as well, because we know that those counties are also working on similar efforts.
All right, and also I'd like to ask a few other questions about that. How do you reach out to, families who might need this service?
In the public health department for the NEOP program?
I think so, yeah.
So we work a lot with the school districts and those schools that qualify for the free and reduced, have at least 50% or more free and reduced lunch rates in the NEOP program. So we have staff that go out. We work with the principals and the staff, and they go to the PTA meetings and the ELAC meetings, and they talk about the different educational events that we can offer for free. And they get parents signed up and interested in attending a cooking class or an education class, and they offer those in the evening on school campus, and they provide, we work with others to provide childcare. We also do health fairs, community events where we're talking about our services and meeting with people that way to let them know what we offer. Everything's free.
All right. Well, like I say, I definitely appreciate you, you and people whom you work with, your organization, that you try to, help out families who are, low income, just because some of these families might be families who never really had much. Let's say, for example, my mother. She is an immigrant here, right? And when she was younger, she really did not have much to eat. Her snacks were really tomatoes. That was the sweetest thing she could eat because they didn't have that much money to buy other stuff besides that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these families tend to, develop a slight eating disorder. Not because, it's mostly just because it was just something that they were not able to have, that it's so much easier to get here. And so for my family, at least, just including my extended family, we have issues of just eating a little bit more than we should. Mm-hmm. And so that tends to build on the next generation. In which case, I'm a anomaly in my family because I actually pay more attention to my food and also exercise. So I do appreciate you doing the work you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. And first point of curiosity, you had the SNAP county profile. I was just wondering what the dollar level is for that 185% of the federal poverty level. What is the dollar figure cutoff for that?
You know, it's a formula, and I don't know exactly. It's based on the number of people in the household.
Oh, right.
I want to say for, and it's kind of a guess, but I'm thinking it's around $40,000 for a household of four.
Okay. And so you mentioned that the kids six and under are at 47%. Does that allow you to provide any programs for that? You said there was a 50% cutoff for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
But is there programs available even though we're under that 50% threshold for the six and under group?
Yeah, so the families qualify. We can qualify families based on where they live with the GIS or based on other benefits programs that they belong to, whether it's WIC or, like I said, the free and reduced school meal or housing assistance. So we can work with low-income housing facilities and target families that way, the schools and the WIC offices and it doesn't disqualify them. Our goal is to make sure that we have at least 50% in class or, you know, in a group. We usually don't do one-on-one. So we usually do kind of more in a community setting, and we've never had a problem with getting people there to have at least 50%.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
One more question, if I may. You talked about getting fresh fruits and vegetables into convenience stores or corner stores and also the vending machines.
Mm-hmm.
What's your strategy for dealing with that kind of push approach versus the demand from the public? I mean, if you can get fresh fruit and vegetables in the convenience store, do the people actually buy them, or what's the strategy?
We've been working with a couple of the convenience stores in Santa Maria in this effort, and they, though, had already were offering some produce, but the quality wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. So our staff was working with them on making sure that they were going through and kind of throwing out when the quality got bad or marketing it in a way that it was reduced price, and then doing some marketing around the locations of where it's at as well. So making that the healthier choice inside the store. Now the program that we have doesn't offer any, you know, structural assistance for refrigerators or anything like that. So there are some barriers for some of our small markets who don't have the capacity to pay for these refrigeration units and stuff that are required sometimes. But we've also noticed that when we educate community members and we talk with them about in their neighborhood about the store and the efforts that we're working with, they tend to go to that store and they're really vocal, and they, you know, let them know that they would like to have the fresh fruits and vegetables and that they would purchase them. And so having the residents talking with the owners is more powerful than us being in there, of course, saying, you know, this would be something good to offer.
Great. Well, again, thank you for the talk too.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes. Chair Lynn.
Thank you for your presentation. It's interesting. I have a couple questions. So first of is about demographic data.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the numbers of participants. Do you have any idea what is the Goleta number of participants in the city itself?
I don't, but I can see if I can find that for you and send it over.
And the second question is, do you know which schools in Goleta participate?
There are, let's see, Isla Vista, Elwood, La Patera, I believe. I think there's three or four that do, yeah. And we've started our interventions predominantly in Santa Maria, Guadalupe, and Lompoc because that's the area of the highest need for the program. But next year we will be working a lot more with the Goleta Unified School District and doing some programming at the schools where that qualify. In the past, we've only worked with Isla Vista.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Warner.
Does the SNAP Ed program also go into the junior highs and high schools?
Some of our partners do. So in Santa Barbara County, the UC CalFresh Cooperative Extension is also funded by SNAP Ed, and they're working in Santa Maria at the high schools, working with them on what's available through their food stores and what they're serving on campus, as well as working with them through their school wellness policies. Some of our efforts involve junior high, but most of them have been focused at the elementary schools.
Okay. I'd like to go to your HEAL program. Mm-hmm. So the city of Goleta does not participate in the HEAL your HEAL program. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a cost to cities to participate?
No. No. Okay. From what I understand, the staff from the HEAL Cities campaign are available to provide assistance, and, you know, technical assistance, but in the past, they came and they did presentations. I'm not sure if they ever came to go into Goleta, but I know in the past they came into our county and they met with certain cities to talk about it. But it's really about, you know, wanting to work with those who are interested in that approach them.
Mm-hmm. So I see you have one of your programs is creating community gardens. Do you have like a step-by-step procedure that you've used to do that?
No, we don't. What we've done with the NEOP program is we've worked with schools and their gardens, and most of those gardens in our county were already established by the ORFLA grant money, and so we're working in Lompoc and Guadalupe with garden educators that are providing interventions to the students in the garden, so teaching them about fresh fruits and vegetables, where they grow, you know, how they grow, and tasting them, harvest of the month education. But nothing as far as the community yet. These are kind of just ideas for cities or parks that are interested. There are communities like Ventura that have a really large community garden that's been very successful, but none that I know of in our county.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you again so much. We enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to A2, 2017-2019 Parks and Recreation Preliminary Budget Overview, going to be led by our Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Director. And I would like to clarify that Mrs. Plummer is our wonderful Parks and Recreation Manager, so excuse that mistake earlier.
Good evening, Chair West and members of the Parks Commission. We're pleased tonight to present to you an overview of the city's budget going into the next 2 years. And we're also going to give you a preview of the city's capital improvement program budget, which goes over a 5-year time period. So there is a lot involved in the preparation of a budget. As many of you know, currently the city's in that very process right now. And it really begins with a look at the city's strategic plan. And the strategic plan document and the budget document are interrelated. And in a nutshell, what they represent, what they reflect, are the city's goals and priorities and objectives over a specific time period. So as I said, the city's budget process is a 2-year period. So it would be fiscal year 17-18 and 18-19. So we wanted to share with the commission what portions of that budget that are being reviewed by the city council involve parks and recreation related projects and programs. Because many of you are certainly aware of the city's recreation needs assessment that identified a series of projects and infrastructure needs over a 20-year time period, roughly $15 million estimate to deal with all of those needs. And so one of the questions is well, how are we working towards meeting and fulfilling those needs that were identified? So the short answer is one step at a time. So tonight we'll provide some overview. So as I indicated, the city's budget process begins and ends with the city council. We just had a second workshop on the city's strategic plan. There are two budget workshops scheduled for the month of May, on May 11th and May 25th, with the budget adoption scheduled to be adopted by the council on June 6th. Just some facts and figures for you as we think about the city's budget. So the city's total budget, all funds included, is $66.5 million. The general fund portion of that amount is $26.8 million. I mentioned the capital improvement program, which is a 5-year program. For the city of Goleta, we have 73 projects listed in that capital improvement program, which represent all in a number that approaches $250 million in capital improvement program. That's a significant number for a city of 30,000 residents. And as you've heard from our Public Works Director, Ms. Rosemary Gaglione, and you've seen some of the presentations from M6 Consulting, there's a lot of work that we're really excited about that are coming forward through this community. Part of the slide that you see here is staffing and personnel. So the staff person that's assigned to the Parks and Recreation Department by line item is Ms. Joanne Plummer. All of the rest of the staff here at the city, including Ms. Gaglione, myself, you'll see tonight also Ms. Ann Wells, we're all part of the, kind of the overall budget where we work on Parks and Recreation as part of our job duties. And you've seen a number of staff here before you that have been involved in various projects. The other part of it is infrastructure and programs and events. So the focus over the next 2 years is really looking at the neighborhood parks. Some of you were at the Evergreen Park opening last year where we did the resurfacing. There's pickleball there, and there's much more to come this year, as you will see. So I'm kind of giving you a little bit of a preview. And I wanted to make sure everybody understood tonight that the numbers I'm presenting to you tonight have yet to be confirmed and adopted by council, but they'll give you a pretty good estimate, an idea of where we're at. Let's see here. I've got so much to talk about. So over expenditures, so one of the things that the commission has asked for, and you've seen, including even tonight, are the organizations that are supported by the city that provide services to Goleta residents. And as you'll see on the slide before you, there are a number of organizations here listed. In fact, many of these organizations you've either had direct contact with or you know of. So part of the effort in providing services to the community is the city is really committed to assisting local nonprofits in their mission to help Goleta's residents. And there are two different programs here at the city where nonprofits can apply for funding support. The first program is the city grants program, which provides up to $100,000 a year in support through a combination of community development block grant funds and city grants that do not exceed $3,500. So there are typically more folks who apply for these grant funds than there are total grant funds. So roughly on average each year, 30 to 40 agencies receive funding through this program. The next program is designed for projects or programs where requests for funding exceed $3,500. These requests are part of the city's budget process and are approved specifically by the City Council. This slide that you see here tonight is where 11 organizations received funding. Those bolded in italics are the ones that provided a service that directly benefits an active park use or recreation services not currently offered by the city. So, as you can see on the top of the list, the Santa Barbara Unified School District for the after-school sports program for junior high students. This contribution towards that program is much more affordable to the city than if the city were to operate the program directly. And so the same is true for many of the programs that you see listed here. Also, you see the Foundation for Gersh Park. You also see towards the bottom of the slide the Goleta Valley Community Center. So of the 11 organizations that you see listed, the total funding that that represents approaches $500,000. The next slide I wanted to just share specifically related to the Parks and Recreation function here at the city are budgets related to expenses for training and video. As you know, tonight in each of our meetings that we have are taped, and it's also posted to the city's website for our residents to be able to go back and take a look at the agenda or a specific item of interest. We also had, as you saw previously, the butterfly docent program, where Ms. Inez Hernandez came and did a butterfly docent program presentation, kind of our annual report. So you see the budget that's reflected there. This includes budget for the coordinator, the supplies related to the program, and also docent materials. And lastly, you see the row for operations, training, supplies, professional service, and general operations at the $15,600 amount.
I don't understand. What's that related to?
So we have put aside funds in this account for future trainings for the commission.
Oh, these are all specific to our commission?
Yes, sir. So I know many of you are very interested in this slide. And this slide here represents five-year parks and recreation projects. There are 10 projects listed, as you see here on the list, beginning with Hollister-Kellogg Park, the playground and accessibility improvements for Andamar, Winchester 1 and 2, and Berkeley Parks, the Stowe Grove Multipurpose Field, as well as Evergreen Park Multipurpose Field, the improvements to the Goleta Valley Community Center Athletic Field. You'll recall that was the field where Ms. Plummer obtained, I'm being optimistic, we'll know in June, but she was able to apply for a grant with the state to develop that park into a more usable facility. The restrooms at Evergreen Park, I know many of you have a great interest in the public swimming pool and aquatic center. The rec center and gymnasium, the community garden, and the San Miguel Park improvements. It's important to point out that these projects have many, if not all of those projects, were listed in the city's recreation needs document. So the important point that I want to make at this slide is there is a direct connection between the city's recreation needs assessment and what you see in this slide in the form of capital improvement projects. There's a connection. So it's an important one because you'll recall when we were putting all of the components together in the recreation needs assessment, the commission at that time said, we'd like to see the connection between the city's budget process and the recreation needs document. And this is one example of showing that connection. So here we have the funding over the next 2 years. So this is going to be very important for the commission and for staff because this will represent, once approved by the council, the real important work effort that's going to take place in the community over the next 10 years. Oh, I'm sorry, not over the next 10. I was looking at the total budget. Over the next 2 years, almost $10,500,000 in funding. So if we go through the list at the very top, the preparation of a parks master plan, the Goleta Community Center athletic field improvements, Hollister-Kellogg Park. As you note, it's the largest budget item on the list. We are trying to work through the litigation on that park so that we can move forward quickly. As you've seen previously, we've brought Ms. Van Atta and her team to show you the various revisions to the site plan. We had to make some adjustments because of the drought declaration, but that project is basically ready to roll as soon as we're able to clear the litigation. You'll also recall that we obtained successfully a grant from the state for over $900,000 for the development of that park. Going down the list, the restrooms at Evergreen Park, the reclaimed water line for Evergreen Park, and also Bella Vista, miscellaneous park improvements, which I will cover. I believe these are the four parks that we're talking about over the next 2 years, and I'll give you more detail on that here briefly. The community garden. Many of you have asked about the community garden because it was listed in the recreation needs assessment. You'll recall that we were looking at a portion of Armidos Park at the very end of Armidos Park to create a community garden. Also looking at the Evergreen Park and multipurpose field and parking lot and San Miguel Park improvements. The estimated budget for all of these projects approaches, as I said, $10.5 million over the next 2 years. That's a significant budget related to parks and recreation. The miscellaneous park improvement efforts and also a couple of the other projects, the aquatic facility and Rancho La Patera. So Stowe Grove multipurpose field is at budgeted at $430,000. This is really looking at the next really 5 years starting now. It's not something that will likely occur over the next 2 years, but it's captured. The recreation center is an estimate along with the aquatic facility. We know that that number is very preliminary, and it also does not include yet the acquisition of an actual site for an aquatic center. The Rancho La Patera improvements, as you heard previously from the M6 consulting firm, we had a presentation on what that was going to encompass. And also the community center improvement repairs. You see there that says TBD. So next Tuesday night in front of the council, staff will be presenting a report related to the community center, looking at the preliminary repairs and upgrades that need to be conducted, as well as the disabled access, the mechanical and other HVAC heating and AC systems at the community center. So those numbers are yet to be confirmed, but there will be a more involved and more detailed report to the city council on Tuesday if you'd like to tune in. And we could certainly bring you back what those numbers landed in at a future commission meeting. These projects that are shown here are at about $8.2 million in estimated budget. So recent projects, the initial acquisition and design work for Hollister Kellogg Park, the costs that have been incurred to date are $2.9 million. The preliminary work on miscellaneous park improvements are at about $9,000. The preliminary work for Rancho La Patera improvements is $22,000. The Evergreen Tennis Court resurfacing and improvements was just over $90,000. And also the pickleball pilot program, you'll see that the cost to date there were $189. Let me provide some additional clarification. Those costs that you see there are a representative of two specific things: the tape that was utilized to stripe the park, as well as the banner that Commissioner Hart asked us to ensure that would be put out there to really kind of highlight the pickleball program, the pilot program that's out there. So we wanted you to know that while we were frugal in the costs that were incurred, that it's been put to great use already. And you'll get some more info on that coming up shortly. Any questions so far?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to continue?
So I had a slide on the questions. I just wanted to say just one more thing before we take some more questions from you. The budget process is really a multi-departmental effort. So we work very closely with the Department of Public Works and obviously a number of the departments, the city's finance department, the city manager's office. We've worked really with just about every department here at the city, planning and environmental review. So the budget document and the projects that you see here listed tonight really represent a very collaborative and a very cooperative effort among multiple departments to bring you the projects and to bring to fruition and completion the projects that you see before you. But I wanted to go back to the slide for the next 2 years and just really share with the commission staff's really excitement about looking ahead over the next 2 years and just really seeing in numbers. But these numbers will really represent a lot more when we go out into the community and see their completion, how much it'll mean to the neighborhoods where these parks are adjacent to. So while we're looking at numbers and facts and figures, there's a human component to this, and that is we're talking about recreation for residents here in the city, and it's also an investment in the quality of life for the community. And so we're really pleased coming out of a recreation needs document where it was just a document that we were looking at that was a big binder, to really now see 2 years after the adoption of that document being able to present to you a listing of projects that tie to that document. So we're really pleased and excited about the council's involvement and hopefully their approval of all this going forward. So at this point, I'd be happy to take any additional questions you have at this time.
Thank you for that excellent presentation. I sit here along with Commissioner Hart, your two commissioners who were here from day one. And it's a sense of pride that I'm sure we both share on seeing all this come to fruition. So thank you for all the hard work that you've done. So I know this gentleman next to me is probably just overwhelmed with questions. So yeah. Commissioner Hart, go for it.
Well, I'd first want to echo that, and I agree with your assessment. But kudos. This is great. I really appreciate the effort that the staff went through to connect all the dots here. I think that it is a culmination of a lot of work, not just, I'm sure, in the budget process, but the needs assessment that you had to tease out and get in front of council so that some of these projects could get into the budget. And like I said, it's just really nice to have specific things that we can talk about in the future, not just tonight, but and talk about priorities and, you know, relative costs and so on. So again, I'm really, really appreciative. So now on to some questions, and most of them are clarifications. I'm not anyway. I'll just get to it. The first one is, in general, I want to understand a little bit better about the difference in the funding source. The Park DIF in particular, I'm curious whether or not, with all of these demands on it, is it running at a deficit, at a surplus? Where is it, and how does it work?
Certainly, Commissioner Hart, the Park DIF stands for Park Development Impact Fee, and these are fees that are collected when projects come to the city, and there is a contribution made for the future development and expansion of park facilities within the city. These funds are distinguished in that they're not used for ongoing maintenance. These are used for new park development or the expansion of an existing park playground area. And in Ms. Plummer's presentation later tonight, I don't want to steal her thunder, because I don't want to be demoted, as I already heard.
We're going to move you to
Czar. I know. but I did just want to share that we really wanted to share with the commission how we're looking to really maximize the investment in doing the parks. So, in fact, you'll hear more later, and I won't
Yeah, I can
Thunder,
wait. I can
but
wait.
You will see that this year we're looking from a program standpoint, a budget programming standpoint, of doing as many parks as we can during the next 2 years. So I hope that answers your question about Park DIF. There are a number of other lists there, and I'll go to that slide if you like, just for our viewers at home to understand what these various funding sources are. So general fund are our general funds here at the city in the city's budget that are programmed for parks activities. The HRP program is the grant at the state level that we applied for recreational opportunities, the Housing Recreational Program Grant Program.
Housing Recreation Program, Park Program.
You can correct me.
It's Housing Rehabilitation Park Program Grant.
I wanted to make sure I got it right. Also, developer agreements or development agreements. Developer agreements are agreements that are between the city and a developer that is proposing a project, where there are specific contributions that are negotiated and part of that developer agreement. As I mentioned, the Park DIF is a development impact fee. What's not on here, and hopefully we'll get to this in the future as a parks and recreation function, are park and recreation revenues. So typically when you run an aquatic center, There's a small fee or a fee that's charged for people that use that facility. So those would be future revenues from that specific use. So that's not on here yet, but certainly if there was an aquatic center that was developed in the future, that would be part of a revenue side of funding for the program.
If you would still comment on the whether it's running at a deficit or at a surplus?
It's not running at a deficit. I believe with the projects that we've listed here, we are putting those funds to good use.
Thank you. You can go to somebody else for a little while.
Thank you very much.
I will say there's a deficit from the standpoint of not specific to that fund, but when you look at the recreation needs assessment and you look at a 20-year horizon and about a $15 to $20 million estimate in funds to address all the needs that are in that document, that's certainly something that we're all thinking about looking into the future. But right now, I think from the DIF standpoint, we're looking to use as many opportunities as we can to use those funds in the community.
Additional questions or comments? Okay, Commissioner Coach Ruth. Yes.
Just two questions. What do the numbers in the parentheses mean? That 9035, 9066, what do those mean?
Those are project account numbers.
Okay. And then just a shout out to Valerie Kushnoff, your public information officer, doing a fine job on alerting the public for the Hollister Kellogg Park. I just saw something update on that. So shout out to you, Valerie.
And I just wanted to say, too, to thank also Ms. Kushnoff and also thank the residents who brought this up at our last meeting where they asked about the status of the park. And they wanted to know what the most recent, you know, activity is, because we all see the beautiful sign that's there. And we'd like to remove that sign and get the park going. So we are very much interested in hearing back from the community on anything that they would like an update on. We're happy to do that.
Thank you. Okay. Vice Chair.
Thank you for this report. It's really interesting and it's informative too as far as future planning. I had a couple questions. It's mostly that I'm not familiar with some of the administrative part of, like, for example, Stowe Grove. I think I was watching the council meeting last week about parking at Stowe Grove, and it has something to do with the fire department being adjacent and all that. Is the parking kind of separate from parks? Because they were really making a big deal about the trees to be cut down and the bathroom, and it seemed sort of parky, but it didn't. It's not in the.
I believe the park that they were referring to was Stowe House at La Patera Park. And the challenge is about the parking lot where some of the trees had affected the parking area and the roots from those trees. And I think there was a discussion with the M6 consulting group to make sure that project included costs of removing, I think, some of those trees so that the parking area could be better utilized.
Well, it was kind of about expanding the parking lot and why they might need to expand it. And it had something to do with the caretakers. It was really kind of some of the things we've talked about also. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wondered, is that part in Public Works?
Public Works is leading that effort, but we're certainly coordinating with them and involved.
So that's not in this plan, this SIP plan?
I believe it is.
It's part of where it says multi-purpose.
Yep. Yeah, we included it.
Stowe Grove multi-purpose field, I saw that.
It's under, let's see, what slide here? The 27, it's on my next slide, yeah.
Ah, okay.
It's on this slide here. So this would be, Madam Chair and members of the Commission, under Rancho La Patera improvements, that would be covered under that cost estimate there at $2.9 million. And I wanted to add that there's an additional type of fee. The fire DIF fee is the fire development impact fee. So there was included in this project was the running of a water line to provide fire service for that area, as well as, I believe, if I recall correctly, the undergrounding of some of the power lines that are in that area also.
Right. So the City Council is working on that now.
Correct. They received a presentation from the Department of Public Works on that. And the project scope was, I believe, expanded as a result of some of that feedback, which is what you see here today.
Okay, well, that helps me understand the, you know, when they talk about Stowe and then Slopshire, I understand better now. The other question is just curiosity. The city has supported a very successful dam dinner.
Yes.
And that's just for the public, that's a dinner that's held at the dam at Lapaterra, or
Lake
you call
Los
it
Canaros.
Lake Los Canaros. I'm not sure with Stowe's there and Lapaterra's there, and so anyway, it's Lake Los Canaros. That is kind of a recreation activity. Who does this? Is a nonprofit in charge of that?
So our community relations manager, Ms. Kushnerov, oversees that event.
Okay.
And it's grown to be very successful and very popular in the community. And we didn't include that in here, but I get your point that it's a kind of a recreation, you know, it's held at the lake, but it's really overseen by Ms. Kushnerov.
Okay. Well, I was just curious how these little cubbyholes of activities are placed, because they're all kind of in the same ballpark. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you. Just to clarify, the development impact fees are one-time fees. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And so I guess my concern is looking forward 5 years, with the drought and that we've had and the Goleta Water District not approving any new water for new projects, is that going to have an impact on these 5 years and 10-year projects that at least look like they're going to use DIFs?
It could very well have an impact. There are projects that have previous and historical water rights associated with them. So it's unclear. I don't have all the detail on how some of those would be affected, because obviously some of them are subject to the drought, and if they don't have the provision of water service, that creates a problem going forward. So it's hard for me at this point to really share with the commission in detail how that would be affected, but it would have an effect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For long term, that would be long term planning.
Absolutely. It resulted in a partial redesign of the city's Hollister-Kellogg Park, because we had a water feature associated with that. It was subject to review by the water district, and we had to make some adjustments. Basically, we had to design for it so that when the drought was removed, that we could activate those systems to operate.
My second question had to do with the money that you got from the state for the Hollister-Kellogg Park. Do you have to use that by a certain time, and is that at any risk of being lost if the
we do
owner the yeah if the it's question doesn't get
it's an excellent question. The state funds that we receive, the $910,000, I believe, has to be used by fiscal year 2019. So we are very anxious to move forward on that park and really put those funds to good use quickly.
And is the projection that the ownership of the land will be settled by then? I mean,
we most certainly hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
We have certainly been very mindful and watchful of that entire process to really make sure that. And I know the city and the city's attorney's office has been involved and certainly understands the importance of moving that project forward. I know there's been a lot of interest from the council and the community, as well as the commission, on this project, and we'd really like to see it move forward. It's really the first project designed from the ground up for Old Town. And when we saw all of the components that are included the skate park component, it's just a wonderful layout and design. We're really excited about seeing it happen and come to fruition.
Oh, yeah, it looks great. It looks like it will be a definite asset. I think that's it.
Okay, I've saved my question for last. So when we are talking about the Rancho Lapaterra improvements specifically, we have had presentations, I think, several times to us, but yet I never got the impression that the Parks and Recreation Commission really had a strong input on what we as a group of individuals thought would be correction for some of the needed improvements. I know when Councilman Kyle Richards was here, he led a discussion on, you know, making the area more welcoming where there were benches and places for for sitting. I had discussed improving the trails from the parking lot to get people to the dam dinner without ice chests breaking along the way. And so I just want to totally understand those improvements, and they're being voted on not by us at all. So it's going before City Council, is that correct? Although we've had presentations on that.
Madam Chair and members of the Commission, the final approval for the budget for the Rancho La Patera improvements will be done by the City Council. And I believe in the presentation that was conducted previously to the council and most recently, there was talk of improving the walkways, as well as, I believe, Councilmember Richards also provided input on making it more welcoming. There was talk about the parking lot areas that needed to be improved. There was a lot of discussion about undergrounding of the utilities. And so just making it more friendly and user-friendly, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the input that was provided by the commission previously was important, and I believe ultimately resulted in what you're seeing before you today in the way of the budget.
Very perfect. Thank you.
Could I add just one more little question? Under the two-year funding for the CIP, you've got the Evergreen Park multipurpose field and parking lot. Did I miss that at some point in time? I didn't know that there was a parking lot component to the proposal there.
I'll take that question, Commissioner Hart. If you look at the recreation needs assessment and it spoke to the athletic field improvements at Evergreen Park, it also added a parking lot in that facility, because if you look at Evergreen Park and the multitude of activities that can happen at one given time, there is not adequate street parking for all of those activities to take place at once. There is a conceptual idea for that based on the rec needs assessment, but prior to anything, any ground being broken, it will have a public opportunity to be evaluated. But that was included in the recreation needs assessment, and it is a need if we are going to be encouraging active use out there in the form of organized active recreation like soccer or baseball or anything like that.
Is that a large component of that expense here? Do you happen to know?
I don't have the budget specifics as to what is where, but in order to restore that area, there's a lot of demolition that has to occur, and then the decision as to whether or not we're going to be putting in any gopher wire or anything like that. All of those discussions are all still preliminary, so we are planning for what was laid out in the recreation needs assessment.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all very much. So we're moving on to item A3 with overview of the City of Goleta's general plan and its relation to the city's recreational needs assessment. It states here Ann Wells, who's our advanced planning manager, and we're delighted to have you. Ms. Wells, welcome.
Thank you, Chair West and Commission. It's my pleasure to be here tonight to give you an update and an overview of our general plan, coastal land use plan, which I'll just refer to as a general plan, and focus in on the open space element that really is what's guiding what it is that you do at the commission level. And also just to highlight the fact that our general plan is our overarching policy document that guides the city's growth for the future and the short term and the long term. So it's a very important document, and it is kind of everywhere in what we do at City Hall. Even the capital improvement programs that you were considering tonight when Mr. Adamidas was giving you an overview of the budget has to go to Planning Commission each year for a consistency determination that the capital improvement programs are conform with our general plan. So we can't move down a path of, for example, a new park purchase and construction that wasn't identified as an area of need in our general plan. So I just can't emphasize enough the importance of our general plan. And you'll see on the slide, the slides all have the link to our general plan, which is on the city's website. And I encourage you to review it and the public too. It was a document that was created by the public over many years and many, many, probably hundreds of public workshops. I think I can use this. Okay. So I think, you know, the goal of the presentation is to kind of guide you in on the open space element, because that is in your resolution forming the commission. But it's also, I think you're more familiar with it than you realize, if you haven't already flipped through it. It's embedded in all that you do. So all the parks they're talking about, they're all identified in the general plan. The policies that are in our general plan in the open space element are all talking about what needs to be improved, where and why. And the staff, we carry our general plan around with us everywhere. Most of them are tattered and marked up because, you know, we do use them for everything, including the budget. So this slide just showing that there's a strong interrelationship between our general plan decisions that are made by the city council and the parks needs assessment. You know, the first step in really looking at our open space element and implementing it is to not just understand what we need, but exactly what type of park or open space we need. And that's what you're getting from your park needs assessment. So this slide is just sort of emphasizing that the general plan is in the center and it spills out into kind of everything that we do and everything that you do. So a little background about our general plan. I already mentioned that it guides our growth. It's also regulated by government code. So it's required to include 7 elements: land use, housing, conservation, open space, transportation, safety, and noise. They're all separate elements. And the city of Goleta chose to do 2 additional elements: public facilities and the visual and historic resources element. So all of those have some overlap with what you do, but again, the focus is on our open space element and how that relates to our rec needs assessment. The elements are all organized by guiding principles and goals, and then broken down from that are goals and policies and sub-policies. And then each element ends with implementation actions or programs. An example of one is a park master plan that's in our open space element. Our general plan title is the general plan / coastal land use plan, because part of our city is located in the coastal zone, and the coastal applies to the portion of the city in the coastal zone. And that is why it's called a coastal land use plan, because that's coming from the Coastal Act. And you'll see in the general plan, there's policies that have a little GP in parenthetical after the title of the policy, or it says CP, or GP and CP. The CP refers to, it's a coastal policy versus the GP, which is inland from the coastal zone. So when we started our open space element, we first did a series of background reports, and the background reports identified a ratio of 17 acres. And we did an inventory of our parks and open spaces. And once we did that, we calculated the acreage and converted it to a ratio. So and that's how the state looks at your needs, and the census looks at needs based on these ratios. So it's, we have a pretty good passive open space ratio, passive open space like Lake Los Carneros and Elwood Mesa. But our ratio is pretty low for the active open spaces. So then when you take future land use build out that's allowed in our general plan, You add about 8,000 additional residents to our existing 30,000 residents. You're adding a little bit more attention to the need. And then you add in on top of that, the supporting that are new houses and then commercial and industrial growth. There's a bigger deficit of active open space, and also dedicated trails were also identified as needed to better connect our community. So the general plan includes policies that address the deficit. So it's specifically targeting expanding our resources so that it can serve not just the population today, but our population in 10 or 20 years from now. So the open space element, the purpose, which is established right in the front of the open space element, I'm not going to read through all of these, but you can see it relates to what you do. It's about parks, open space, the maintenance, new parks, so that they're constructed concurrent with new development, so that we're not, and that's where your development impact fees come to play, so that you can time your new construction with your new growth. Public access, is obviously important for the beach and the shoreline. We're very lucky that we have our coastal area in the city of Goleta, and that we own so much of it is very unique. And we're lucky community to have such coastal access. And we also have an overarching guiding principle to protect areas associated with Native American culture. That's a requirement under the government code, but I think even if it wasn't, it still was reflective of the public input we received when we prepared the general plan, so it's important to our community. There's 9 policies, and each one starts out with an objective. You're welcome, of course, to read that in our general plan, but really quick, so that the open space policy 1 requires beach and bluff top lateral access so that you're not just walking down the beach, which is the open space 2 policy, but you're able to walk along the either shoreline or along the top of the bluff. And then the third one is, so now you have your access, your lateral and your vertical access, but now you have parking. So your transit system is connecting into your beach areas with signs. And some of that's the Coastal Act stuff. The wording and the way it's phrased is coming from the Coastal Act. And then OS4, which is policy 4, establishes the need for a designated trails and bikeway system. So again, connecting people with places and future populations, future neighborhoods with our recreation resources. And Elwood Devereaux open space area, that's the name of the full open space area where we connect in with the county or UCSB's open space area, is so important to our community. So it has its very own policy and it's very detailed. And then the open space policy 6 is a public park system plan, which I think is very relevant to you, which again is just supporting the needs of existing and future residents and employees. And I think you're getting there, starting with your rec needs assessment and then moving on to your master plan. And OS7 is the adoption of an open space plan map. And that's required under the government code and the Coastal Act, and with the intention of protecting the open spaces for future generations. And then open space 8 is protecting Native American and paleontological resources. Really protecting this, identifying and protecting the sites. And then finally, we can't talk about all this stuff and not talk about money. The last policy is about how we finance all these facilities and how we establish the method by which we're generating revenues or working with private entities, for example, to finance everything. So when you're looking at the budget, all of those terms, development impact fees, grants, private entities, they're all envisioned in our general plan and kind of guide us in on how to do what it is that we need to do. So this map on the screen is from our general plan. It's figure 3-2, and it's showing existing and planned parks, trails, and open space. And We don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but I did want to just visually, it kind of shows you, with the exception of the little pull-out table that describes our parks, which total 38, but that it's not actually 38, is kind of splitting hairs, so it's looking at some parcels, like breaking out some parcels separate from others, so you might have one or two parks twice on the table. So I believe there's 21 parks, distinct parks, but are broken out in 38 ways here. But you can kind of see on the map that we have a pretty good spread of park areas, and our general plan identifies the need with those triangles. I'm going to get to that in a second, where we're underserved. So when you overlap this map of our existing park resources with future potential development, the Hollister corridor in the central Hollister area and through Old Town is underserved. So we'll get to that in a second so you can see that. So here's a list of our existing parks. And the reason there's numbers next to them is because they correlate back to this table. It's from our general plan. There's more information in our general plan with the table and the map. So it gives you the name and the assessor parcel number and whether it's public or privately owned. And so it's a pretty helpful map. And then our planned parks and open space areas, our general plan identifies five specific areas that are needed for parks. And it's the red triangles, A, B, C, D, and E. They're not necessarily drilling down to that exact location. In some cases it is, but in some cases it's not. But it's saying in these areas there's new growth that's projected in our general plan, and they specifically need to have facilities. And you can see one expansion of Armitos Park, an active recreation park south in Old Town near the drive-in theater, because there is some growth projected there, and there really aren't any facilities in that location of the city. So that's why there's a symbol there for a new park. And I won't go through them all, but we have actually implemented some of them, like the letter E, Cabrillo Business Park open space. When the Cabrillo Business Park was developed, that wetland area that's in the runway extension that's across from Los Carneros was preserved, and there's some platform walkways. It's open to the public. It's a really, really nice area to walk or run. And before we had our general plan, that was not an area that the public had access to. So it's a beautiful walkway if you haven't already taken a look at that. So we have six park types that are identified in our general plan, and that carries over into the rec needs assessment. Then they kind of break those six park types down a little bit more. You're probably familiar with all the park types, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time with them, but you have the mini pocket parks. Like Nectarine Park is an example. They're pretty small, and they might have like children play areas and picnic areas and benches. And then neighborhood parks, they're a little bit bigger, with a bigger service area, so you might get people that walk further or maybe ride a bike or drive to get to these parks. A little more active recreation, but without the on-site parking. And so that would be San Miguel Park as an example. And then the neighborhood open spaces are very similar to the other park type, but are passive uses. And then community parks, they're bigger with a larger service area. Evergreen open space is an example. We talked about that, or you heard about that park earlier tonight. You might get some athletic fields a little bit. Those are the park types that we're kind of seeking out because we don't have enough of. And then regional open space. Those are more like our Elwood Mesa open space, so walking, cycling on trails, but staying on trail surfaces because usually they have some type of biota that is important, maybe sensitive and protected. And then we have special use parks. The Goleta Community Center is an example. And again, that's a variable service area. So you're going to get not just the locals using it, but they could be regionally accessible. The open space element also has a series of trails and bikeway policies, because again, that was one of the areas that we had a deficit. And I think that the rec needs assessment and the, which we'll get to in a minute, is the bicycle and pedestrian plan that we're working on right now and workshopping with our community. That plan in particular is trying to connect the different modes of travel other than cars, and building off of the map that's in our general plan that already it identifies existing bikeways and sidewalks and identifies areas that need to be connected and addressed for multimodal uses. The coastal trail, the ANZA trail, those kinds of things are also in this policy. It's very detailed, this policy, because of the need. And I should add also, our community had a lot of input on this particular set of policies, because it was so important to our very active community. And the Coastal Act requires that we have a shoreline access policy. There's a lot of detail about easement acquisitions, and really it's to protect the public's right to access our beach. So the city has, for example, an easement at Haskell's Beach, so we don't own that parking lot, the land, or the trail to get down to Haskell's that cuts through the Bacara property, but we have an easement that's protected so that we will always have access, the public will always have access to the coastline. And then I put this map, which is from our general plan, figure 3-3, as an example of the level of detail that we get into in our general plan because of the value that Owen Mesa in particular has to our community. So you can see the map, it's showing where we have sensitive habitat on the Elwood Mesa, where the trail system is, and then where the proposed trail system needs to be improved. So we use this map and tear it off into other planning documents that we have in the city. And that's a good lead in into this table that's here. So the open space element kind of is driving a lot of other policies and programs and plans in the city. And the recreation needs assessment is one of them. But they're all have some varying degree of connection. Even the UCSB North Campus Open Space Restoration Project, which had its groundbreaking today, that's located right along Phelps Road, not in the city, but adjacent to the city, and it connects into the larger Elwood Devereaux open space area. We actively work with UCSB to make sure that our trail systems and bike systems all connect through that open space area, so that our residents can have, and UCSB students can have a nice experience through the whole open space area without feeling like it's jarring going from one jurisdiction to another. And we also, I forgot to add that we have some meetings that are set up for you so that we can go over all of these different plans and projects. This one, is that right? Is that right how we're explaining this table?
Yeah, thank you, Anne. The table that's listed right now on the slide is a proposed schedule of all of the different city policies and plans currently existing or in draft plan or adopted that we wanted to share a little bit and provide this Q&A opportunity for you with the staff that has been working on these plans, and to allow a little education for everybody here and at home as well to understand how this all ties together with what we're trying to accomplish in the recreation needs assessment. And the first two, after Ann's completion tonight, we've completed. So the next ones are proposed on your regular scheduled meeting nights as a presentation. And because we only have 6 meetings a year, we still have a few more that we're working on right now, a few plans with some modifications that we'll be presenting in 2018. But we wanted to kind of put together a list that is kind of following along with our CIP list as well, so that everything ties together for you.
I see. And so I apologize. You already heard a presentation from UCSB, I take it, on the North Campus Open Space Project. That's great. I'm really happy to hear that. We have, for years, have worked so hard with UCSB to collaborate and coordinate the trail design and the restoration types and how the drainage is flowing and communicating with the neighbors along Phelps Road. So it's great that you guys are already briefed on what they're doing at UCSB. And then you will hear more about the bicycle and pedestrian master plan. I hope you get, you're signed up for email notifications for the public workshops. They're really great public workshops and we get a lot of input. You're welcome to come if you haven't already. And then we will give you a presentation just on the Elwood Mesa Open Space Plan. And by the way, all of these are on our website, so if you can download them and take a look at them. And we have some hard copies available for the public, too, for viewing. And then we have the Elwood Mesa Coastal Trails and Habitat Restoration Plan. That project was approved by our Planning Commission. That's implementing it's basically implementing many of the features on this map, including the beach access points. If you've been out to Elwood lately, you'll see a lot of erosion, and this project would address that erosion and also improve the trails and restore a bunch of the habitat. So we'll give you a presentation on that project. We approved it, but it's with the Coastal Commission right now. So it's coming. It's coming soon. And then the Lake Los Carneros Management Plan is a pretty big document. It has a lot of specificity in it as to what we can do. It's been already finished with environmental review, so we can implement a lot of things in the Lake Los Carneros Management Plan. So I think that briefing is going to be very helpful for you. And that when you say Lake Los Carneros, it includes the Stowe House. It includes what they say La Patera, so it's kind of cumulative of all of that stuff. And then the Complete Streets Plan, we just started workshopping that. That's an old town. That's multimodal, again, looking at pedestrians and cyclists and cars and trying to connect them all in a safe way. And it was a very well-attended public workshop. I think there were 60 or so people in addition to, we had about 15 staff and consultants there and received a lot of really good input. And that's implementing the general plan and trying to connect all the street systems and sidewalks into our larger vision for our bike plan. And we also have an adopted wildfire prevention plan or wildfire protection plan. And that's a citywide plan that was approved by the state. So it allows us to get grant funding. We are implementing many of the implementation strategies in our open space areas that are identified in the plan. For the portion that's on Elwood Mesa, however, we have to write up a very specific plan and conduct environmental review and go to the Coastal Commission because there's so much sensitive habitat. We have to balance fire prevention along with protection of special status species and their habitats. And then finally, there's the Butterfly Habitat Management Plan, and we'll give you a presentation in 2018, by then, we will have a management plan that will have very detailed strategies to address some of the complicated habitat conditions that are on Elwood Mesa because the habitat is including non-native plants that were planted a long time ago, over 100 years ago. There's some new growth, but there's some management issues and conflicts that we need to address right away. So we're working on that plan and we'll be doing community outreach on that and look forward to bringing you a summary of how we're moving forward with that plan. So that's a lot of information for you on our just one element, that one of the 9 elements that we have in our general plan. But I hope if I leave you with anything that you understand the relevance of the open space plan and how it's sort of driving the programs that you're looking at. And while I'm giving this presentation, I have no doubt that your staff in your neighborhood services department, they could also be giving this presentation. So they're very familiar with our general plan. I think we're a good, strong group of people in City Hall where we have our general plan out in front of us and use it as it's intended. But because we do collaborate so frequently, it's my pleasure to have given you this presentation. I look forward to future presentations.
I'd like to thank you so much. It was overwhelmingly wonderful. So, do we have any questions? How about Commissioner Warner?
All right, I'll get started. Thank you. That was a very good presentation, and I have a lot of questions, so I can do a few and then pass it on. When you talked about the open space element, you said sometimes it'll show as a general plan or a coastal plan. Are they always in agreement, or do they not agree? And if they don't agree, which takes precedence?
They agree. It was written so that they do agree. And we were actually very careful to write a general plan where we tried to write policies that were not just specific to the coastal area, but that could apply everywhere in the city. So usually they're resource specific. We don't have, the coastline is only in the coastal zone. So there's the conflict risk is low on that. But yeah, they're not in conflict.
Is there any way or in the future that the city would take full responsibility for any planning or elements within the coastal plan? Or is that always the California Coastal Commission has that authority?
That's a good question. The city does not have a certified local coastal program with the California Coastal Commission. So projects in our coastal zone, we approve in concept, like the trails project, and then we have to bring it to the Coastal Commission for their final approval and permits. Meanwhile, we are working on a submittal to the Coastal Commission so that we can ultimately get a certified local coastal program. They're big undertakings. We've been working on it for a few years now, and that's something that's in our budget for the next upcoming fiscal cycle.
Oh, okay, good. On the ratio of 3 acres per 1,000 residents of active open space, does the Gersh Park, is that included in that ratio?
That ratio was generated from the 2005 inventory, and Gersh Park was in place then. So yes,
okay.
It did.
I just wasn't sure since it's a private mm-hmm. park. I didn't know if the city could count it as active recreation.
We did count it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess my last thought has to do with open space that is part of a new development. Does the Park and Rec Commission at all look at that, like Los Carneros Village Way? Does that come to the Park and Rec Commission at all, or is that the Planning Commission? And this is my first meeting, so I'm a little bit unclear about, does Park and Rec Commission ever have a say on open space and new developments?
So that project was approved a while ago. Might have been before the commission was formed. But it is stemming from the general plan. It did go to Design Review Board, the park. And mm-hmm. it did go to the Planning Commission. So there were a lot of stops along the way. That's something that I think we should have a separate conversation with your director about, as far as if you're going to be looking at development and public open space within developments. There's not usually public open space in developments. It's just that one particular project had a public open space because of the general plan requiring it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? How about our Coach Ruth?
Thank you. Very detailed, this whole report. My question is regarding the Cabrillo Business Park open space. you mentioned the trails and such. My question would be that basketball court and the volleyball court, is that owned by Deckers, or is that part of that availability to the people of the city of Goleta?
I know which area you're talking about. That is part of the Cabrillo Business Park development, so it would be owned by Saris Regis, I believe. As far as whether or not those particular amenities are available to the public, I'm not sure.
I don't believe that they are. I know that actually Ann and I went out there one day and were reading some of the signs, and some of those features were not open to the public, but the trails that went around the property were open to the public.
And then, okay, thank you. And then would the parking, like, is there a place to park if you want to just walk, or?
I believe there's just street parking there, and there's ample street parking.
Yeah, okay.
It is.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, I know that Commissioner Hart is just waiting to ask.
Can I develop a reputation in absentia here? Thank you again for the presentation. Since this is so forward-looking, I had a questions related to that. The population forecast identifies 8,000 new residents in future growth. What's the time frame on that?
So our general plan doesn't specifically say 2030 because it was a little bit open-ended and unclear as to, you know, how our development would unfold. But 2030 is looking like a reasonable planning horizon. So when we did the population estimates and used census data, we were projecting out to the 2030 timeline.
Okay. And similar to the prior question about the ratio, since the county's Goleta Beach Park is adjacent, is that factored in to any of those calculations?
No. Just the resources within the city of Goleta.
Okay. That's an interesting issue, I would think, because it is right there adjacent to some of those identified areas you talked about by the old drive-in, and it's right there. But okay. And I think I had one more. Oh, how far does the coastal zone extend inland? What is there?
I believe it should show on this map. Let's see. It's a strange boundary in the city. It just bisects our city and like follows 101, but to the south. Do you see the black hatched line? So we have a better map.
So the entire airport.
The black and contained. Yeah, the entire airport is. So a portion of Old Town, if you start on the right side of the map, Old Town, and then Stork Ranch, and then Elwood Mesa and Santa Barbara Shores area, and then Sandpiper Golf Course and Bacara.
I'll just leave it at that. I just can't imagine how that impacts all the development and planning and so on. But, okay, it's a lot further than I thought. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you for a wonderful presentation.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, we're going to move on now to item B, our consent, calendar, B1, approval of the Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. And I did see our city clerk come in.
Yes, we're on packet production mode right now, so I jumped in and it's ready. So I'm here, they're out there doing it.
So we are just going to have a review of that and have a motion to approve those minutes, right?
That's correct. This is a consent item, so unless there's any issues with the minutes that have been submitted, then we ask for a motion and a vote on that.
I motion that we approve the minutes as stated.
Any seconds?
I'll second that motion.
Thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody
aye.
Opposed?
Aye. I'm abstaining because I wasn't here last.
Okay, well, it looks like it passed, so we thank you all very much. And moving on to, I believe, our next item is a discussion item concerning recommendations for playground improvements in various parks, going to be presented to us by our Parks and Recreation Manager, Joanne Plummer.
Thank you, Chair West. Members of the Commission, tonight I am excited to bring to you think something you've been waiting for a little bit. We're asking that you, after listening to our presentation, provide some input and support staff's recommendation to proceed with the process to conduct playground improvements in various city parks. So as you may recall, in December, M6 consultants presented to the commission an assessment of the playgrounds that were identified in the recreation needs assessment as needing improvements. In February, we shared that we had a few hurdles that had been identified relating to the study around the pour in place surfacing, and that we had some additional playgrounds in Goleta that had needed immediate attention. So the goals for our process tonight is, as we look at each of the park sites closely, we've identified the following for this playground improvement project. The first being that we would like the commission support for the removal of the swings for safety purposes and support the continued evaluation and engineering efforts at Santa Barbara Shores Park, and we'll go into further detail along the presentation. Second is that the commission support the continued evaluation and engineering efforts at San Miguel Park. Next, we would like to support the recommendation for neighborhood and public outreach meetings to be held in the neighborhoods of the park locations to meet with the residents and hear what they would like to see. And lastly, as changes are proposed to some of these locations regarding access paths or playground relocation, we would like the commission to remember that open, active recreation opportunities was identified, and you heard again tonight here, as our greatest need in the recreation needs assessment. So San Miguel Park, as you may recall, this park has a retaining wall and a railing and a raised playground. While the playground is in good condition, improvements that are needed are related to the surfacing and to access, as well as improvements to the railing and the retention wall that's holding that playground up. The slope to the playground actually exceeds ADA standards, so staff is considering a possible handicap parking space off of Winchester Canyon or modifying the location of the playground that would make ADA access possible. In short, there's still a lot of engineering considerations to be explored, and staff is proposing that work continues on this site and outcomes and considerations will come back to the commission at a later date. And as you see the first picture on the left, that's just a picture of the retaining wall and the railing. And in the presentation that you received from M6 consultants, they kind of got in a little closer to show you how the railing was failing and how the wall was failing as well. And so it needs attention. And then as well, we need to address the safety surfacing. The second picture shows there's a dirt space that a lot of people pull right into now in park. So if we were to make that a parking space for handicap accessibility, it would reduce the amount of trail we would need to go from the access to the playground, as well as provide a close opportunity for anybody with ADA needs. The other park that's requiring some significant engineering at first glance, we thought this would be a pretty easy park, but as we look a little bit closer, we've addressed a couple of different issues. So Santa Barbara Shores, the first picture shows the slope to go up to the playground structure. From the street, you really can't see the playgrounds at all. But the slope to get there is a concrete slope, and it actually currently exceeds ADA standards. So we need to do a lot of evaluation at this park. One being, do we do some switchbacks here? Do we do some flat levels? Because you can increase the slope for ADA access if you only go a certain distance and then have a flat space for resting. And then, or do we really relocate the playgrounds down here altogether? So those were some of the concerns that we did have. And it's important to note that this location was identified in the recreation needs assessment as just needing repairs to the safety surfacing at the playground. Since the surface is poor in place, we're not able to make those improvements quite yet until the results from the multi-agency study have been released regarding the rubber surfacing. However, staff is recommending the immediate removal of the swings and after the further ADA evaluation, come back, make a determination about what to replace those swings with. As you can see, the swings have no safety surfacing under them at all, and so for that reason, they don't comply with current standards. When we go around some of the other things, it would be best for us just to pull those at this time and then come back with replacement suggestions or modifications once we get past the ADA hurdles. Parks that are ready for improvements. This is exciting. So we have four parks left in there. If we go back to the recreation needs assessment, there were five parks that were identified. We go back to the original M6, the M6 consultants, there was five parks that were identified. Andamar, Winchester 1, Winchester 2, and Santa Barbara Shores and San Miguel. We also found Berkeley, which is also known as Emerald Terrace. There's tennis courts there as well. That park is located behind Kellogg Elementary School. These are the features that are currently in those playgrounds right now. All of them are swings. So each one of those locations, for the most part, can just be some mild modifications to the play area, and then removal of the swings, installation of different types of features, maybe that could include swings, maybe not, depending on what our meetings come out and tell us, and then maybe a little bit of an expansion or a little shift. But in your presentation that you received in December, there was some ideas as to what we actually really could do if we wanted to move a lot of those playgrounds around. But really, out of the recreation needs assessment, only one of them was recommended for a relocation, and that was Winchester 1. So staff's proposing tonight that we look at the relocation of Winchester 1, listen to the residents about their suggestions, and on all the other parks, remove the current structure, make some modifications to the play area, and then put new structures in place. Here's some pictures of all those swings, as you can see. So one of the things that swings are fun, we all love swings. I have not met a person that hasn't enjoyed swinging. It's very relaxing. But as you can see at Andamar Park, we have a huge swing set there, a great structure, a great nice open space for playground structures, and only three children at a time can play. So once we remove the sand, there's no digging in the sand. So really only having the capacity to serve three children at a time, the neighbors may want to serve some more. They may want to just replace it with swings. Again, we're going to go ask them. Winchester 1, this picture's a little bit dark, but as you right behind that swing set is a railing and a goalie. So that park, you cannot see that swing set at all from the street. So that is, we have a desire to pull that one closer to the street so that if we do put a play structure up there, that parents can feel confident knowing that if their child were to get hurt, they could be seen by somebody up there. Or if people are up there doing things that they shouldn't be doing, we also want to address those as well. Winchester 2 Park and Berkeley Park as well. Again, all swings. And the one thing that I would like to share with you is as we pull some of this equipment out, the big thing that we have to address in all of our parks is our surfacing. So in all these parks, surfacing is a big deal because we want to pull out that sand and put an appropriate safety surface in. The structures in some of them, they are old and outdated, and it's time to say goodbye to them. The others, there are some that are in some good condition, so we will definitely take a look to see what we can perhaps repurpose either in that park or another park as a supplemental feature. So our next steps. We are proposing that we do two neighborhood public outreach meetings. And the reason that we say two, even though we're looking at four, is because Winchester 1 and 2 are so close in proximity that we'll have one meeting for those two parks. And then the other two parks are relatively close as well. And so we will have one meeting for those two parks. And then after the outreach, those results will go through an RFQ and an RFP process. So we know exactly what it is that we're looking for and asking for at those parks. Then we head on to construction and then the excitement of dedicating new playgrounds here in Goleta. So in the community meetings, I'm sure you want to know a little bit more about those. Some of the decisions that we're going to ask the residents to make is the types of products that will be included at their site. And this is not saying that we are guaranteeing that we will be able to include that because everything will be driven by the budget, but we want to know what their desires are and what their wants are. And then we'll be able to go from there. We need to know if they want to go to have products for 2 and 5 year olds, 5 to 12 year olds, possible expansion of play areas, again, driven by the budget and what they're looking at having there. The types of products that they're looking at, swings, climbers, slides, motion, themes, education, music, and again, the breakdown. So lots for them to decide upon. And I'm just going to share some of the slides that we've started in preparation of what we're going to have them look at. Again, they're not going to say, I want a tire swing, or I want a parent-child swing, I want a traditional swing. They're going to tell us that they want swings. And we will listen to their input to see if there is a desire to possibly add in maybe a parent-child swing or toddler swings and so forth. They'll look at climbers. They come in all shapes and sizes. They'll look at slides. Again, lots of different shapes. They'll look at motion. You can see the top picture that has the girl pushing the other young lady. We have one of those in one of our parks right now. So we have some of these things. Some of them are making a great comeback, the seesaws and teeter-totters. I was actually playing on one this weekend. And a lot of these neat motion features that are coming back to keep kids moving and problem-solving and working together. And as we recall on some of those merry-go-rounds, you know, you get a little nauseous as that spins around a little bit. So much fun. A lot of the information that's being presented into playgrounds today is the incorporation of education and music. So as you can see, a lot of these panels here are lower to the ground. Again, ADA accessibility, a child in a wheelchair can just wheel up and participate. They don't have to climb something to participate. The music features on the bottom, those are fabulous as well. They make lots of great sound. Obviously, we wouldn't want to put that in a small, tiny neighborhood park. The neighbors might get very upset with us. But again, wanting to know what they want to hear, what they want to see, and what their park could potentially look like. Fitness equipment is a newer rage, and this is really popular with a lot of communities. You can actually put a one piece along a trail, and or you can put a cluster like you see here of a few different pieces together. It's a great free outdoor workout space, and it's a great community gathering space as well. Fitness equipment is good for older children as well as teens, adults, and senior citizens. The fitness equipment ranges from very physically active use to uses that pertain around balance and stability and working on your gait and so forth for our older population. Again, we talked about the different age groups. These are typical 5 to 12-year-old age group playgrounds. You can see the diversity in the products, how you can put them all together about what it is they really want to see at their park. Again, a tot lot, otherwise known to 2 to 5-year-olds, you can have a full play structure or some features. I believe at Berkeley Park, we also have a tot lot there that does need resurfacing, but we have a couple of these riding features that features the two boys in the middle and also a spring-loaded kind of teeter-totter type thing there as well. So we have some of these things in place in some of our parks. And so what we are proposing tonight is that we do these two community meetings. The one for Berkeley Park and Andamar Park, we're still trying to nail down a location for that. Unfortunately, Kellogg School's not available. It's a busy time of year for the schools. So that school's not available, but we are looking at some other locations. So we will keep that, keep you informed of when and where that will be. Well, when will be Monday, May 22nd from 6 to 7:30. And again, Winchester 1 and Winchester 2 will be at Brandon Elementary School on Wednesday, May 24th from 6 to 7:30. So that's all I have for you tonight. And again, it's really exciting to be able to bring this forward to you. I know you've been waiting for it. We've been working through processes and trying to see how we can best make this happen. And as Vito mentioned earlier tonight in his presentation, looking at strategic approaches so that we can go forward with a multitude of projects at once to try to keep the price competitive and keep our costs low, always trying to see how we can save a little bit money because we know how much we have in the forecast and in those projections for all those projects. And in addition, in pulling out Santa Barbara Shores from the cluster of park improvements, that would actually become project number 11 for us in that 5-year CIP. So just so you are aware, that will become its own project and it will be actually taken out of the park improvements generic project number. So we have a lot on the table and we're anxious to get started. And just as a reminder, the release of that multi-agency study that includes the EPA and the Consumer Product Safety Commission and a few others, that is scheduled to be released later this summer. So that's the end of my report. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I must say that was most impressive. My goodness, and how exciting for all of us to be a part of that. So I know we do need to have questions and a discussion, and then we will need a motion to get this approved. So anyone would like to start? All right, going down there.
Just a few things with the Santa Barbara Shores. Moving the park or the ADA requirements, which is cheaper? I mean, that's boils down to the bottom line, probably, correct?
That is definitely a factor to be considered. And again, because that's going to take some more extensive evaluation, that's why we are proposing that we pull that out of the scenario, have that created as its own project so it can have its own team moving forward working on that. We can focus on these four parks, get them underway, and then draw some attention to some of those other projects. Again, at Santa Barbara Shores, though, we will be removing the swings because that is a necessity, and it's not removing the swings and walking away from that park. It's removing the swings right now, and then after further evaluation, coming back to that park to replace either swings or another feature based, again, on neighborhood input.
And then one other question with the San Miguel Park, the parking space, what type of surface does that require for ADA?
Our Public Works Department will be looking at that. It does require a hard surface, preferably asphalt or concrete would be ideal. Decomposed granite is an allowable surface depending on the amount of space and the length of the pathway, but the preferred one would be asphalt or concrete.
All right, thank you.
Anybody else over here? Okay. My goodness, I think, okay, here we go.
Can you remind me, what is the budget for these four parks? Are you going to decrease the budget then since you're taking out Santa Barbara Shores or?
No, because originally Santa Barbara Shores was just going to be a surfacing issue potentially. So we are, because of the amount of work that is proposed that we potentially could be seeing, we're pulling that one out and having that project at its own. And then because we are looking at potentially surfacing all these parks and possibly adding a couple features in a few of these areas, we are looking at $633,000, just under $634,000.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I need, please, is a motion.
One tiny issue, I guess. We're going to remove these swings. I've become the sign guy. Is there going to be some kind of sign just kind of informing them that they were removed for safety reasons and that there is plans in the works?
We will be working with our public information manager or our public relations manager to make sure that we have informed that neighborhood of what's happening. And again, we'll definitely be available. I don't foresee a sign out there because that's a whole nother installation. There's not really a conducive place to hang a banner or an inexpensive sign, but we will definitely do our best to reach out to that neighborhood and let them know.
I guess there may be more sign requirements than I'm aware of. I've seen signs like in Lake Los Caneros about the mosquito spraying and those kinds of things. We can't just do something simple.
We can definitely look into it and see what we can do.
Okay. With that, I will move to support the recommendations as you've laid out here for the removal of the swings, the additional engineering, the public outreach, and maintaining the active recreation priority in the planning process.
Excellent. May I please have a second?
I second it.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Okay.
This is really very nice and good movement for the parks, and I think that it would be really great, maybe it's already planned, that be an article in the newsletter about some of this, especially about the meetings and everything so people know, but also maybe mentioning that there may be some changes coming so people kind of have a little heads up. And I agree that last article on the park was great, really well done. So the more we have, I know people are really interested in it. It's very positive. So thank you.
That's a great idea. Thank you. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Wonderful. So that's it. So thank you very much.
Chair West, I would like to add that if any of the commissioners are interested in attending those public meetings, you are more than welcome. And I do ask that you please RSVP with me to let me know that you will be there so that we can make sure that we don't have any violations of the Brown Act. So we want to just be aware of that. All of you could be in attendance. There's just a few steps we would have to take. So just let me know if you'd like to attend, and I will definitely shoot you an email and let you know as soon as we have a location determined for the first meeting.
Great. Thank you. So we are moving on to our director's report, and go for it.
Madam Chair, you've received a lot of information tonight from staff, and we have much more to present to you for the remainder of the year and in the coming meetings that we have. So we're really excited about seeing the progress on the various projects that we've been able to share with you tonight. Just a few items under the director's report. The first one we'd like to mention to you is we'd like to invite the commission to the second Youth and Family Roundtable that will be held here at City Hall at noon on Thursday, May 4th. So if you're able to make it, we would love to have you there. And I believe Ms. Plummer will be running that meeting. So looking forward to that. The second item is we have an update for you on the pickleball pilot program at Evergreen Park. As of right now, it's being used, and we're getting an average of roughly 3 calls a week. The banner installation went without a hitch. We were very pleased to see that go forward. And we're also getting residents and feedback who are calling us about wanting to go to the community center to play pickleball out in the tennis court area. So that'll be another site, I think, that we'll have an opportunity to look at and just kind of enhance the use of that whole facility. So we're excited to see the level of interest kind of increasing. Thirdly, we had some of you may have seen or heard about the meeting that we had, the joint meeting between the City Council and the Goleta Union School District on March 2nd. And at that meeting, staff, myself, was able to provide an overview of the city's recreation needs assessment document. We also provided project updates on the Hollister-Kellogg Park, the recent grant application that we were able to file with the state. And we also talked about the joint use agreements. So we understand that Superintendent Banning will be retiring from the Goleta Union School District, and we wish him the best in his retirement. So we will be speaking with staff at the school district to, you know, really kind of move forward on the joint use agreements. And we hope to have that as a future agenda item in June to you to give you an update on that. There was a lot of interest from the school district board about the various activities. There was interest in the joint use agreement. There was interest about Hollister-Kellogg Park and the skate park component. I suspect we'll see some of the school board members out there checking that out once it's all done. So it was really a positive and very collaborative meeting, I thought. So it's also on the city's website. So if you'd like to watch the video from that meeting, it's really a great meeting that we had. I have a really great announcement with all the good news we've been able to share with you tonight. We also have a new team member coming on board to the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department. Liliana Encinas will be our new management assistant, and we're really excited about her coming on board so she can provide assistance to everybody on the Neighborhood Services team, and certainly Ms. Plummer and myself, because we need all the help we can get. But we really have a lot going and happening this year, and we're really excited about having that resource available to us. Ms. Encinas previously had some work here at the city where she oversaw the city's CERT program and coordination of training. She's bilingual, and we're just really excited to have her come on board the team. Her first day at work is Monday, May 1st. So, Ms. Encinas, if you're watching, we are welcoming your arrival. Also, at the next meeting of the commission on June 28th, and this almost falls under the future agenda item, but we will have the bike ped master plan update for you at that meeting, because I know there's been interest on that, and we want to make sure that we're providing you timely updates on the various projects and activities that relate to parks and recreation here at the city. This concludes my director's report.
Thank you. That was wonderful. It's a very exciting time for the commission, so thank you very much. So in conclusion, our item number E is future agenda items for our next regular meeting, which is going to be on Wednesday, June 28th. And I think you shared some of those agenda items already.
If we could, Madam Chair, we just wanted to mention that we hope to have an update for you in June on the city's HRP grant application, because we should know by then from the state if we were awarded and funded for that. So I know you'll have an interest in hearing about that. We do too. And also, if there are any changes coming out of the budget process through the time between now and adoption in June 6th, we would like to also share that with you as part of just an update to keep you posted on the budget and make sure you have the most recent information available to you. And I'm sure we'll have a number of other items ready that we'll be preparing and working on between now and the next meeting for you. So thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming tonight and watching us. So the meeting is adjourned.
Grand Canyons come from Colorado. Gold comes from Nevada. Divorces also do. And divorces also do.